ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Lasat pankaja kinjalka
Lasat pankaja kinjalka
Vita kosheya vasasam
Vita kosheya vasasam
Srivatsa vakshasam rajat
Srivatsa vakshasam rajat
Kastubha mukta kandalam
Kastubha mukta kandalam
Lasat pankaja kinjalka
Lasat pankaja
Pita kosheya vasasam
Pita kosheya vasasam
Srivatsa vakshasam rajat
Srivatsa vakshasam rajat
Kastubha mukta kandhanam
Kastubha mukta kandhanam
Lasat pankaja kinjoka
Lasat pankaja kinjoka
Pita kosheya vasasam
Pita kosheya vasasam
Srivatsa vakshasam rajat
Srivatsa vakshasam rajat
Kaustubha mukta kandalam
Kaustubha mukta kandalam
Lasat
Lasat
Shining
Shining
Pankaja
Pankaja
Avalotis
Avalotis
Kinjalka
Kinjalka
Filaments
Filaments
Pita
Pita
Yellow
Yellow
Kausheya
Kausheya
Vasasam
Vasasam
Uskarni
Uskarni
Srivatsa
Srivatsa
Bearing the mark of Srivatsa
Bearing the mark of Srivatsa
Vatsasam
Vatsasam
Breast
Breast
Brajat
Brajat
Brilliant
Brilliant
Kostubha
Kostubha
Kostubhajan
Kostubhajan
Amukta
Amukta
Put on
Put on
Kantaram
Kantaram
His neck
His neck
Translation. His loins are covered by a shining cloth, yellowish like the filaments of a lotus. On his breast, he bears the mark of Srivatsa, a curl of white hair. The brilliant Kaustubha gem is suspended from his neck. Purport. The exact color of the garment of the Supreme Lord is described as saffron yellow, just like the pollen of a lotus flower. The Kaustubha gem hanging on his chest is also described. His neck is beautifully decorated with jewels and pearls. The Lord is full in six opulences, one of which is wealth. He is very richly dressed with valuable jewels, which are not visible within this material world. Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya
Prabhu Jaya
Shri Advaita Gadadhara
Shri Vasavi Gaura Govinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Lord Kapila Dev, the avatar, is giving instructions on devotional service. His instructions are particularly key for a particular yuga or phase in human history. But everything he says always connects to loving devotional service to the Lord. Lord Kapila Dev is speaking within the context now of the classic yoga system, the Ashtanga yoga system, the yoga of eight limbs. Previously, he has been speaking about bhakti, in relation to the Sankhya Yoga system, analyzing the material universe and finding the root. And when he first gave his instructions in response to questions by his mother, Devavati, he directly focused on bhakti, which is the fruit, the culmination of any Sankhya, any yoga. We get an idea from Bhagavatam of the full scope of the spiritual panorama, in which nothing is concocted, nothing is whimsical, everything is authorized. It's a very important point for us to understand, because the nature of Kali Yuga is whimsicalness, capriciousness. Whatever you think, whatever you want to do, how do you feel right now? Follow that. You want to obey your parents? That's nice. You don't want to obey your parents? That's nice. Just find yourself somehow. Find your path. Your path is different from everyone else's path. You've got to find your own path, your own mission. This is Kali Yuga whimsicalness, foolishness. If we say, find your own path to make the sun rise, you may whimsically think this way or that way, but the sun rises of its own accord. Similarly, in our foolishness, we may say so many things about, I feel like this is the path for me. Don't try to tell me about your path. That's good for you. Everyone needs their own particular goal, their own particular path to get to the particular goal. Now, when it comes to the sun rises of its own accord. Similarly, in understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth, we need the Supreme Absolute Truth to reveal Himself. We're too tiny. We're too faulty. If you want to understand the sun, wait for the sun to rise of its own accord. And then take your awareness of the sun directly from the sun. Similarly, when Krishna comes and when his avatars come, they're revealing the Supreme Absolute Truth, free from our speculation. A very important point that Srila Prabhupada writes in purport in Bhagavad Gita is that the finite cannot approach the infinite. Not possible. When you're limited, how can you approach the unlimited? Your capacities are limited. Your sense perception is limited. We cannot even understand material phenomena properly and completely. What to speak of what is beyond that? So how can the finite grasp the infinite? But things can work the other way. And that is the basis of the bhakti knowledge. Because the infinite has infinite, unlimited possibilities, the infinite can reveal himself even to the limited, to the finite. That's the only way it works. The unlimited can make himself known to the limited, because the unlimited has unlimited options. But it doesn't work the other way. When the sun rises and shines on a cloudless day, you're getting direct experience of the sun. Similarly, when Krishna and his avatars appear, you're getting the direct experience. Or you get the same benefit when Krishna appears as Srimad Bhagavatam, as Bhagavad Gita, as the Hare Krishna mantra. These are all Krishna appearing to you directly. But we need help to understand that. The example I was giving last week, we when I spoke here, you put a diamond in a child's hand, the child won't know what to do with it. They'll probably throw it away or swallow it. But when the parent instructs, you have a most valuable gem. It could pay for your whole university education. Then the child takes the word of the parents and realizes the value in the child's hand. Similarly, Krishna is present as his holy name. Krishna is present as Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is present as the deity. But we need help to understand what is right before our eyes. If on a bright sunny day someone wants to wear the darkest sunglasses and cover up completely, there's no bare skin showing, then they won't get the benefit of the sun. This is why, for example, there's such a vitamin D deficiency, because in Australia, New Zealand, everyone is afraid of skin cancer, so they don't want to leave any bare skin showing. Unless you're brown enough that you can handle it. But if you're pale, you're afraid. Oh, the sun, cover up. Hat covering your whole head. Long sleeve, even in hot weather. Have I put on enough sunscreen? Am I putting on the sunscreen right? Generally, persons are very frugal about putting on sunscreen. But the doctors always instruct you got to be smeared, gobs of it on you. And you have to be aware, it's the 2 hour mark, my sunscreen has worn off. Smear some more on. So the sun is shining regardless of all these antics that we're going through. But we can block ourselves from the sun. I'm sure you've seen persons, maybe you've done it yourself if you're pale. Big wraparound sunglasses, dark as can be. Big floppy hat that covers the whole head. Even they make those hats that have a thing that goes down the back of your neck, you know. So the sun doesn't burn your neck. Long sleeve shirt, even on a 40 degree day, and no skin showing. But the sun is shining for the benefit of all. But we have impediments. Similarly, Krishna is present, but we have impediments. So the purpose of the guru is to relieve us of those impediments so that we can actually see what is already there. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Andhaka. Krishna is like the sun, Maya is like the darkness. Wherever there's the sun, there can be no darkness. Similarly, wherever there's Krishna, Maya cannot influence you. So that is our mission statement, how to increase the Krishna sun shining in our life. We're always working on that, we're always planning. We're always calculating, analyzing, how can the Krishna sun rise more in my life and be more present? That is the perfection of yoga. So in this chapter, Lord Kapilade is speaking within the context of the classic yoga system, the physical yoga system. And he's pointing out that the purpose of that Ashtanga yoga system is to meditate on the super soul of the heart. All the steps are meant to bring you to that culmination. But in bhakti, in terms of the nine processes of devotional service, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, bhava, sevanam, arjanam, sakyam, atmanivedanam, you have Krishna directly, without going through any preliminaries, without climbing the ladder. You're straight on the top rung of the ladder. So you may wonder, all these verses you'll find in this chapter, 28, Kapila's instructions on devotional service. They mention so much about the classic yoga system or the mystic yoga system. And how, through various postures and breathing, you finally get to the point where your senses are withdrawn from material sense objects. You're in samadhi, focused on the super soul in your heart. But we can't do that in Kali Yuga. Even Arjuna, who has the qualifications of Arjuna? But even Arjuna told Krishna, when Krishna explained in a nutshell to him, the mystic yoga system, "Oh Krishna, I can't do this. The mind is so fickle." So what to speak of us? Yet we should know about these systems because they are part of a real human civilization, as I explained last week. You need to know the components, the options in a real human civilization that we don't have present today because we don't have a real human civilization. So we spoke about that last week. How in a real human civilization you've got karma. Karma kind of the path of performing good karma so that in your next life you get a good birth situation. And then there's Gyanakanda, the path of metaphysical speculation, using your tiny brain to understand this is temporary, this is eternal. And of course, there's yoga, following the breathing exercises, the postures. It's very mechanical. But the whole point is, jhana vastita tadgasti manasapashyanti. The whole point of the classic yoga system is meditation on Vishnu. And then there's also upasana ganda, worshipping the demigods for, of course, material benefit. Those are all there in a real human civilization. That's why Bhagavatam is dealing with all this. So we may wonder, well, what's the point of all this? Why do we have to hear all this? But we hear so much about so-called scientific advancement, technological proliferation, entertainment enhancement. We hear so much about it, we consider that those are elements of a real human civilization. So we need to hear, so we understand what is our context and why. In the beginning of Bhagavatam, clearly states, the age of Kali is most unfortunate, most dark. Everyone is slow, particularly about spiritual understanding, and they're always disturbed. Try to analyze your life materially, or look at others' lives materially. You'll see always disturbance or efforts to counteract the disturbance. That's the daily agenda. How am I going to avoid anxiety or counteract the anxiety that's already present? Stress. Maybe 15 years ago, 10 years ago, in Australia, in the working world, everyone was so worried about stress, stress management, stress reduction. Yeah, it's not so much like that anymore. Just, you got a job, you got a career, you just surrender. That's the way it is. Stress is a part of life. Anxiety is a part of life. How could it be any other way to live? If you can't handle a life full of stress and anxiety, then you're useless. Take life as it is. It's full of stress, full of anxiety. That's life. You want to be successful? You've got to be stressful. At the pinnacle of the yoga system, there is meditation on Vishnu. So you'll see, if you study this chapter, side by side with the mystic yoga system's descriptions, Srila Prabhupada is always pointing out how you get the same result of the classic yoga system simply by hearing and chanting about Krishna. So you see how undogmatic the bhakti knowledge is. It's not to say, you must do this because this is the only way and we're not going to talk about anything else and we're not going to explain why. No, it's explaining all the ins and outs. It's giving you the whole picture. Yes, there's karma, there's dhyana, there's yoga. But all culminate in focus on Krishna, service for Krishna. And then, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they come and say, take the pinnacle straight away. Especially since in this age of Kali, nothing else is going to work for you. Your life is too short. Your life is filled with too much anxiety. Take Krishna directly. Take Krishna's service directly. So yes, in this chapter you get a whole technical presentation of climbing through the yoga system, withdrawing your mind from material affairs, withdrawing it from the material sense object, and then meditating on the super soul in the heart, and now you're getting, in today's verse, descriptions of that super soul in the heart. But all that and much more can be directly achieved simply by hearing and chanting about Krishna. So that is our task, to realize that for ourselves. Otherwise you may take it as simply some sentiment or some kind of exaggerated statements. You have to prove to yourself that you can solve all your problems simply by hearing and chanting about Krishna. And once you get that realization, you'll be able to help so many others. The real welfare work is convincing persons that they actually can solve all their problems simply by hearing about Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, discussing Krishna. But that sounds, you may say it because it's the company line. But what about, will you try to realize it for yourself? Everyone needs to taste that real victory. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. The supreme victory brought about by individually and congregationally chanting Hare Krishna, discussing Krishna. If there are some crises in your life, some setbacks, and they push you to that supreme victory, then that's the greatest fortune. This is why Queen Kunti says, let the calamities happen again and again, because when there are calamities, we're more Krishna conscious, Krishna's with us. The real calamity is when Krishna's not with us. In this way, the bhakta, the devotee, is beyond happiness and distress. Whatever happens, so-called happiness, so-called distress, where is Krishna? How can I contribute to Krishna's happiness? Later in this chapter, you're going to hear about how material happiness and distress is so artificial. We talk about this from time to time. If you can pierce the veil and see the ruse, see the cheating that's going on, you save yourself so much trouble. Because as I often explain, people are so touchy, they're so on edge about their own happiness because they know others are happy. They know others are happy. It's only you who's not getting your fair share of happiness. And once you realize you're not getting your fair share of happiness, what comes next? Yes? No?
Envy.
Hmm? Envy, yes, but?
Competition.
No. No. Who are you going to blame? Hey, isn't that what husbands are good for? The whole world is good for that. Why didn't you? And you said. You have to blame someone for the problems in material happiness. But if we can understand how material happiness and distress are external, and of course a genuine yogi has to realize that, we save ourselves so much unnecessary anxiety. And we stop playing the blame game. Lord Kapiladeva will explain that material happiness and distress are caused by the false ego. The false ego pushes you to identify with these false substances of happiness and distress. They're not false in that they don't exist. They're false in that they are temporary, they're products of the material energy, and they do not touch the spirit soul. Mistakenly, we think that material happiness and distress are features of the spirit soul, the Atma. Of course, the Sanskrit word Atma can refer to body and mind, besides referring to spirit soul. Our mistake in material existence is to think that we can act to generate our own happiness and that it will satisfy us to the core. We don't understand that in material existence, all our material propensities function in a distorted way, and whatever those material propensities are, they can never satisfy us. It's really hard to accept that, isn't it? What do you mean? All my material propensities are distorted and they'll never lead me to fulfillment in any way? Sounds too harsh, doesn't it? Like, what's the point of life then? Well, there's no point to material life. But if you can understand the source of the perverted happiness and how that source has pure, unlimited, uncontaminated happiness, then your life is successful. Bhakti yoga means identifying with Krishna's happiness. That's the perfection of yoga. This is not so difficult, is it? Anyone who's a parent knows how the parents identify with the child's happiness, right? When the child's happy, you're so happy when the child does something successful in school or later in life, gets the good job, the parents are, oh yes, it's like the parents have done it. And when the child may make some big mistakes in life, the parents take it like they did it, they made the mistake. So we already know how to identify with someone else's happiness. That's supposed to be the ideal relationship, right? You want to partner with someone who will identify with your happiness, and you promise to identify with their happiness. So this is all not so strange and exotic to us. The problem is we pick out tiny living entities who don't have the capability to fulfill us, because they're so tiny. Constitutionally, they're not able to fulfill us. Krishna presents himself as the person qualified to fulfill our happiness. Qualified, so in that you can identify with Krishna's happiness and be satisfied. So that is the whole art, science, and culture of Bhakti Yoga. How to identify with Krishna's happiness. This is real love. Just like the love you imagine you want for yourself is all about someone who's into you. One of my relatives, maybe it was my sister, maybe it was a cousin, told me that. She was looking for a husband. She said, I want someone who's into me. Yeah, that sounds cool, doesn't it? Yeah. I want someone who's into me. Someone's going to focus on me. That's the dream. In other words, I want someone who'll be into my happiness. Contribute to my happiness. And of course, I'll try to do the necessary in reciprocation. And bhakti yoga is the same principle, except it's in relation to the only person qualified in happiness. That is Krishna. And by our connecting with Krishna's happiness, we are fulfilled because we are Krishna's parts. It sounds so sublime and simple, and actually it is. So what ruins all this simplicity? Now, simplicity doesn't mean that there is an absence of beauty in Krishna. Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful. The simplicity is all about our relationship to Krishna. Something has skewered the whole situation. Something has turned the whole situation upside down. And that is our contact with the material energy, which makes us want to be the controllers and enjoyers. How that disease always just seems to well up in us. How can I control and enjoy the world in some kind of way? We want to control because we think by our controlling, we can arrange for our happiness. Actually, it's very hard to completely trust someone else that they can fulfill your happiness. So you always have to be in control this way or that way. Because the bottom line is, only you know how you can be happy. Maybe you can control the other person so that that person, knowingly or unknowingly, acts for your happiness, but really only you know. This is our disease, and it always comes up again and again. Hearing about Krishna reestablishes us in our natural position as dependent on Krishna. We always speak about this. Would you criticize, for example, that child there, Yamuna Jivan's child, for depending on her? Would you criticize it? Why are you depending on your mother? Look at you. Just resting on her leg. Just be independent. No. It's natural that he should depend on his mother. The only question in your mind would be the qualification of the mother. But you would never criticize him for depending and being subordinate to his mother. You just want to know, are the parents qualified? What are they doing in terms of the dependency of the child on them? So why do we have a problem depending on Krishna then? As Prahlad Maharaj explains in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, establishing relationships with Krishna is as easy as a child establishing a relationship with a parent. But, Prahlad adds, going to hell is hard work. Serving Krishna, establishing a relationship with Krishna is so easy. Going to hell requires such endeavor. So we have this idea that dealing with Krishna is so difficult. But that false perception is brought about by our false ego. Our false ego is caught up with material happiness and distress. We identify with that false ego. The goal of bhakti yoga is real ego. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. We'll work so hard serving so many material causes, material effects, material goals, material circumstances. Full-on service.
What is the problem with serving Krishna with our senses?
The problem is we, due to ignorance, don't see what we're going to get from it. We have some slight idea. But we need to increase our understanding. Therefore, when you hear how beautiful Krishna is, you become attracted. That is why by hearing and chanting about Krishna, you get the perfection of meditation immediately. Krishna's face is described to be like a lotus flower. And around that lotus face are swarming bumblebees. What are those swarming bumblebees? His hair, his curly hair around his lotus face. And then there are two fish that are swimming. What are those two fish that are swimming? Krishna's eyes. You see, the lotus flower is most beautiful when it's sitting in the water, surrounded by swarming bumblebees and having fish swim around. All that enhances the beauty of the lotus flower. Similarly, Krishna's lotus face has the swarming bees around it in terms of his curly black hair, and has the fish swimming in terms of his two eyes moving here and there. And by his glances, he showers mercy on the devotees. So just by hearing and chanting about Krishna, we get the perfection of yoga, the perfection of meditation. And it's also a fact that, by the way, in this age of Kali, no other process is going to work. So this is what's happening in this chapter. You're getting the mechanics of the yoga system described, the goal of all those mechanics, and at the same time, you're learning. Bhakti gives you all that straight away. It gives you the goal of the mystic yoga system straight away. In a way that's possible even in the age of Kali. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you for the class. I watched some documentary shortly about addictions, and the scientists were explaining, they found that if someone is addicted to relationships, to have good relationships with people, they actually are very well safe from having a heroin addiction or whatever it is. So how does this work? How come the relationship is so powerful that can keep people from alcohol addiction?
In fact, many happiness researchers, it's one of the necessities of the age of Kali, you have to have persons researching what is happiness. Many of them say that the only real material happiness that you can count on is from relationships. You can't get it from money or prestige or social respect. A famous study done at Harvard following persons over 50 years of their life concluded that those who focused on relationships actually had some material happiness. Of course, those relationships are temporary, and when they end, there's so much pain. We need a bhakti community that gives everyone the benefits of bhakti relationships. The more devotees are concerned with everyone, seeking to aid everyone, the more the bhakti community thrives and people are attracted to that. Because certainly in the Western world, loneliness is such a pervasive. You can't count on anyone. You can't depend on anyone. So yes, when people think of Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, they should think of the best relationships, thriving congregations of devotees that care for each other, inspire each other. More and more you'll see that people are so concerned about that. Even in India, you all know, things are changing. Life is becoming more and more difficult. Work harder and harder. Commute longer and longer times and distances. The in-laws are becoming more and more difficult to deal with. What's going on? So regardless of what is our past cultural history, we need each other. And bhakti is about the supreme relationship. Therefore, Krishna says, Tadvini Prani Bhakti. If you want to know the truth, you approach a representative of Krishna. And in the next verse, Krishna says, the proof that you've done that properly is Yajgatka. You'll know that all living beings are in me, they're mine. You won't be an illusion anymore. Understanding Krishna means understanding his parts also. You'll understand yourself and you'll understand others. And as your bhakti deepens, you'll be able better to deal with yourself and to deal with others too. It all happens hand in hand. It's not that, oh, I'm just focusing on Krishna, but I don't know how to deal with others. No, if you're actually Krishna conscious, the whole package is there simultaneously. Because everyone is part of Krishna. There's just an authorized way of loving everyone. Just like there's an authorized way of eating. The body has so many places you could put the food, but you always put the food in the mouth, knowing it's going to go to the stomach, and the whole body is energized. Similarly, there's so many living entities, but there's one chief living entity. You put your love and service there, and all the other living entities benefit. Because you'll know, by serving Krishna, you'll learn how to take care of Krishna's parts. So focus on Krishna, and focus on Krishna's parts. All happens simultaneously. There should be an authorized way how to love, how to care. Just like there's an authorized way how to eat. All right. I have to catch a plane to Mumbai, so thank you very much. Adios.